Welcome back, clinical problem solvers. Maddie and Yusuf here. At CP Solvers, our mission is to make clinical reasoning accessible to learners worldwide. We invite you to join us for our live virtual morning reports, where we break down cases and sharpen our diagnostic reasoning together. Now over to you, Yusuf.
Thanks, Maddie. Just a quick reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice. Patient details have been modified to protect their privacy, and the views expressed here are our own, not those of our employers. Now, let's dive into the case.
Enjoy the show!
Welcome back, clinical problem solvers, to another episode of WDX, Formulary Diagnosis Series. I'm Charmaine, one of your hosts for this episode, and I'm joined by only two of my favorite people, Kayla and Alice, for a follow-up to our last episode on burnout. How's it going, everyone, on this very fine Saturday morning?
Great. Can't complain.
That's what Kaylin sounds supposed to call everyone.
Excellent. I am in deep need of coffee, but otherwise doing all right.
This is how much we love each other and podcasting, that we are up early to do this. And mostly because I just want to have my friends hang out with me. I am super excited for this episode, but before we get started, we have Rachel joining us, and I'm so excited. Rachel is going to be a new member of WDX and our awesome audio editor. Rachel, welcome to WDX.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Rachel. I'm a third year at the UNC School of Medicine, just starting my clinical rotations and excited to be working with Kaylin and Sherman and meeting Alice today.
Woohoo! Third year.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah. Crushing it. Well, thank you so much for joining us. During the last episode, we discussed how burnout is like not simply the result of working too hard or needing better self-care. And like circumstantial burnout is often driven by like external stressors, like, you know, workload, life events. Existential burnout stems from loss of meaning, uncertainty about professional identity, and repeated conflicts between one's values and the realities of a healthcare system. So for today, we want to shift the conversation from surviving to designing. Not just how do we avoid burnout, but how do we build careers that fits us?
Yeah. And as we talked about in our last episode about burnout and moral injury, burnout isn't always related to the workload and how heavy the workload is or how much you're up at night taking call. Sometimes it's very existential and it can reflect a misalignment between what you're doing and your values. You can be successful on paper and still deeply unhappy if you're job conflicts with your values and your priorities, your personality, or just the life you want to live.
Yeah. And for many of us who are in academic medicine, we've been taught how to get a specific type of job, not how to evaluate whether that job is right for us or if that's the job that we want. We're taught to optimize for prestige, fellowship match. For example, you're taught to keep the most opportunities open, publications, compensation, geography, but rarely are we encouraged or paused to ask, what kind of life do I want? What gives me energy? What drains me? What trade-offs am I willing to make? Am I not willing to make? And what does success actually mean to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we counsel folks in thinking about taking the next career leap, it really starts with understanding ourselves and our values. I feel like when we are in training, finding a job seems like, you know, an audition. Am I good enough? But really, it's important to ask ourselves, is this the place, space, and people who are going to help me become the person I want to be and really allow me to thrive in living into my values? One of the biggest mistakes that people make during job searches is evaluating positions before understanding themselves. And if you don't know your values, every opportunity can sound appealing. And then we kind of get swept up into this storm. And before you know it, you're working at a place where it's really easy to burn out or have moral injury because the work you do progressively trespasses the values that are important to you.
And not to say that you have to know exactly what you want or be crystal clear on your values before you start the job search, But just it's important to stop and reflect before you start throughout the process, and especially as you're thinking about what job to take, because these are dynamic and you might learn things about yourself throughout the process. So values aren't just abstract things. You know, they're actual concrete words that you can try to think up and see how they resonate with you. So for example, do things like prestige, stability, high income, work-life balance, flexibility, autonomy, community, creativity, commute, stress levels, autonomy, creativity. Did I say that twice? Creativity, adventure, change. Do these things resonate with you? It's also important to think about, you know, we're so conditioned. And so certain words you might think you should value, but maybe you don't truly value them if you really think deeply about it. And maybe things that you think, you know, society tells you you shouldn't value, maybe they are valuable to you. So I think just being very honest with yourself. And if you're having a hard time kind of really deciding what's most important, just think through your day. What activities give you energy? Are you happier as an independent contributor or a manager? Do you like being in a more collaborative environment, or do you like your independence? What sacrifices are you willing to make in the short and long term? And what will you regret not doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the exercises that actually helped me was literally drawing a little diagram of representing every activity throughout the day and the week, and then dialing it to, you know, this gave me joy and energy or this didn't. And then looking back to say, okay, like what about these things really give me life and what are some values I can attach to them?
The part that resonates with me is like, you know, what matters to you. And, you know, the part you were saying, okay, about like, what are your actual values and the things that you think is important versus the things that like kind of academia or medicine or society told you that is important. And I remember I was like meeting up with like part of like different attendings when I was like looking for jobs to get a sense of like what their job search were like, or you know, like how did they choose their first job? And especially like these other people who were like my mentors, really important to me. And as I was like, you know, reflecting and jotting down my notes from them, and I'm like, oh, these are like their values that now I'm like, oh, they're important. But I'm like, wait a moment, which one of this actually resonates with me? Because at times it might be actually in direct conflict to people that you respect or you care about. And that's okay. Because most importantly, there's just no correct answers. There are no correct answers. Medicine sometimes like moralizes its career choices. Academic medicine may be viewed as like a more noble, or private practice may be viewed as more financially motivated. Sometimes like part-time work is unfairly interpreted as lack of ambition. None of this is true. Like, because your values are really personal, what matters is that they align with the majority of the work that you want to be able to do.
Yeah, because when the work that you're doing and the behavior that you're engaged in is discordant with your values, it's soul crushing.
It is. Yeah. Truly.
And I agree. One of the advice that one of my mentors, the great Denise Davis, gave me during residency, I think as I was thinking about the next step, she's like, you know, when you get to fellowship, meet with people, have dinner with them, and ask them what their values are. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting. Like, it seems like such a personal question. I think it never would have occurred to me to just directly ask people, but she really empowered me to just ask them. And it's also interesting because people's values also change. So, you know, like, what were your values when you were starting out? And what are your values now? It was crazy to me to just be like, you can just ask people, but you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if they didn't think about their values, you know, that'll be a prompt for them to you should really reflect on that so I can have better answers for the next mentee.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like, when you hear people, like, talk, even if they don't have, like, words attached, they kind of tell you their values as they're, like, going on about, like, what was important. Like, I remember when attending this, like, yeah, the first 5 years, you really, really need to do as much direct care as possible because, like, you want to hone your skills and you want to be the best doctor you can be. So that person really values, like, autonomy and, like, clinical skills. So even though they didn't tell you, sometimes, like, you just listen to people talk, or if you have a really good friend who's willing to listen to you just, like, spill out your gut, they can help you narrow down what your values are behind, like, all of this thought that you had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, one exercise that is very practical and that may help is just take stock of your day or a period of time, a week or a month, and just reflect, what are some moments in medicine where I feel most alive, energized, or fulfilled? And conversely, what leaves me depleted? And then just trying to get a sense of what's driving those patterns and what are some of your values that you want to take at least into the next couple of years as you're exploring your career.
Yeah, because if, for example, your job rewards productivity, but what gives you meaning is teaching, which can be hard to bill, you may constantly feel unseen or undervalued. If you thrive on mentorship and collaboration, but work in a highly isolating environment, you may slowly burn out despite quote unquote good hours. If flexibility is really important to you, but you accept a job that's optimized for prestige, resentment can build over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And another important point is that, there's no perfect job, right? Like, we're all in medicine. We have, like, experienced medicine. Every job involves, like, trade-off. The question isn't, is this job perfect? The question is, like, are these trade-offs worth it to me? And that framing matters because a medicine trains us to think that there's always one best answer. But careers are a lot more nuanced than diagnoses at times. And a highly, like, academic environment, you know, as Kay mentioned, can offer, like, mentorship, simulation, prestige. But it might be a lot less flexible and involves oftentimes, like, dollar compensation. And life is expensive. I think, like, it's okay to care about having a good paycheck. Money is important. And I think at times, like, we don't talk about that as much, that, you know, we worked so hard to get to where we are. So we deserve to be compensated. And it's okay to get compensated well. And it's okay for that to matter to you. And, you know, a community position may offer, like, more autonomy, at times work-life balance, more financial incentive, but it might have, like, less research infrastructure or fewer trainees if that's something that is important to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, as we said before, too, your priorities may and will likely change over time. And that's okay. Yeah, a job that fits you in your late 20s, early 30s may not be the same job that fits you when you're in your 40s and 50s and in a different stage of life. Values are dynamic and careers are dynamic and evolve as well. I remember when I just got out of training, I knew that I liked academic medicine and I had a sense of what are the things that you got to do to succeed. And I felt like I could do those okay, like reasonably well. But there were just a lot of pieces that didn't give me joy. And I really wanted to explore what it would look like to be in community medicine. And so I found a job with a lot of clinical hours to train me to be a really good clinician in the community. I think where I am now, you know, words I would choose for myself that reflect my values are autonomy, creativity, stability. Yeah, I used to do the crazy startup life, and I'm not in a place in life where I want that right now, and community-oriented work. So that's why it's important for me right now to have a job that is rooted in community, that gives me enough autonomy, the ability to call the shots and shape my role and the work that I do with enough creativity. That's not just a 9-to-5.
Thanks for sharing, Alice. Like I said, I think it's super helpful to hear from others about what their values are and how they've applied that and how it's evolved over time. And so I'll share my values. I feel like for me, when I was searching. Sustainability was top of mind, I think really related to our conversations about burnout, just because I'd been in training for so long and had been so rigorous that I wanted something that was sustainable. Because unlike residency or fellowship, where you're picking your place for the next 3 years, you're picking a place potentially for longer. Although, as an aside, after 3 to 5 years, that's a good time to kind of pause, reflect, and kind of evaluate how things are going for yourself. So as an internal check. But my values, as I was thinking about this, I think one was flexibility, two, collegiality, and then financial security. Mm-hmm. So regarding flexibility, I think, you know, as I alluded to, you're doing all this training where you might not have a lot of flexibility, and then finally you're out in the world. I thought it would just feel so soul-crushing to get a job where if something were to come up, you know, if I needed to go to a doctor's appointment or things came up, it was really difficult to be able to accommodate that. You know, and I had heard of jobs where if something came up, it was really hard to get someone to help switch with you, or to, there were just a lot of barriers to doing that. So I think flexibility was really important to feel like I could finally have a life outside of work. And if there was an emergency, that could be accommodated. And as we get older, there's always so many life things that happen. So flexibility was really important to me. Collegiality was also really important to me. Like, these are the people that you're going to see day in and day out. You're going to rely on. They're going to be the people that you're sharing patients with, that you're sharing schedules with, and just being in a place where I felt valued, respected, and I valued and respect them, and where it was a pleasant environment, was really important to me. And then financial security. And so for me, you know, how much I made mattered, because like Charmaine was saying, life is expensive, but also I think having some stability and security. And so for me, being in a model where some years you might have a really hard time, some years you could make more, like, I just didn't like that risk. I'm trying to think of what the word is, but I like the stability and the security, even if that meant overall it might have been a little bit lower, as long as it was more predictable. So I guess predictability was important to me. So those were the things that I was working with. And so when I picked my job, you know, I might complain to my boss like about the cost of living, but it feels okay because I know at the end of the day that security, flexibility, collegiality matter more to me. And I always remind myself of that when I think about the cost of living in LA.
Yeah, all of that like resonates so much with me as well. So, but I was looking for hospitalist jobs, and the way I kind of was framing it for myself was like the people, the work, the environment, and like in each category, like what I wanted. I think the work itself, like I'm someone who, I think being an educator is an identity and very important to me. And it took me a while to realize, like, you know, I'm actually maybe I even care more about like the education part than I do about the type of the clinical work and like being a clinical educator. And so what I really, really wanted from my work was I love working in groups. I love working within the community and with others. So as much as a teaching time as possible was one of the things that was really important to me when I was looking for a job, and having medical education opportunities, like having medical students and residents, and not just like, you know, clinical teaching, but also some more like structured medical education, which means like being tied to the medical school or like a residency program. And with that sense was like really, really important to me. And when it came to people, same as what Kaylin was saying, like I wanted to be in a place where I felt like this is a group that works well together. And I'm just beyond lucky every day for the job that I have for the past 6 years. I'm like, I love working with these people. They're awesome group. So I'm like, I'm happy when I'm at work, like running into my colleagues and working with them. So the collegiality is like so important when it comes to sustainability. And the other thing Kaylin mentioned as well, like the work that is like feels like sustainable, because not only I have a lot of interest within like the work itself, but like with CP Solvers and the other opportunities that I have, it means having a job that it gives me time and flexibility to be able to do other things that I can like scale up and a little down. So I found a job that was able to give me that I can still do like the work that I was doing with CP Solvers while being able to still do a good job on my, you know, so-called quote unquote 9 to 5 or my 100%. And the other thing about the environment is also like kind of the organization itself. And is it, again, like, you know, both from a financial security perspective, like one of the things that I think medicine is great is we have job security. A lot of other people might not have as much job security and like kind of want that financial stability was a big part of it as well. And I was like willing to tolerate like a bit of a lower salary for having the exact type of job that would be sustainable for me. So like, you know, what the work is, like the people and also kind of like the environments that you're going to be functioning on. And on a personal level, like I have insomnia. So at nights, I just had to minimize the amount of as much nights as I could do because I just would not be functional. And the residency taught me that the least amount of nights would be better for my overall health. So that was another thing that I focused on.
Thanks so much, everyone, for sharing. We will move on to everyone's favorite topic, networking.
Woohoo!
I think for many people, networking can elicit some feelings. Sometimes negative feelings. It can feel uncomfortable. It can feel transactional, even performative. But networking is just another way to say relationship building. And as we know, relationships are foundational. And also beyond just networking for some kind of goal of getting a job, you know, relationship building is, as we've alluded to, how you learn about yourself by talking to other people, hearing their journeys, hearing their values, and hearing their reflections. And this can all help you clarify your own values and goals.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I kind of mentioned this earlier that, you know, when I was applying for jobs, I didn't have this talk. So I didn't know I really have to like focus on my values. So I got to that point after I like started meeting with a lot of different people and was like, whoa, everyone's so different about the way they found a job. There's so many different hospitals job. And I kind of, after talking to so many people, then it occurred to me that like, oh, what I'm hearing from everyone is like what is important to them. So what is it actually important to me? And I had to be very, very honest about what was important to me, even though like someone that I really admired may not value that as much as I do. And I think a lot of it at that time, the attention was like, okay, how much attending time versus like direct care, mostly because like direct care works on a very different set of skills than does like when you're supervising attending. And like as early on, a lot of people feel very strongly about like kind of percentage of that work. And then you have to like really sit with like, what are those trade-offs and what is like important to you versus the organization or like people that, you know, are your mentors. And I think one thing about networking to realize, and that's kind of framing that is helpful, that is like, you know, so much of medicine is like fundamentally relational. Like some of the most meaningful opportunities comes not from applications, but from people who know your work, people who trust you, people who advocate for you in rooms you're not in. And, you know, I think like I reflect back to CP Solvers and how this all started. And if, you know, Robbie didn't think of me or wouldn't have called me to be like, hey, Charmaine, like this is something that we think of doing. Are you interested? I wouldn't not be in this position. So, but I always like say medicine is all about relationship and it's a smaller world that you think. So think about those relations and like how you're showing up to a lot of places that you might not be even realize that, you know, you're making an impression.
And I would also say that don't think of it as networking as something you have to do. Think of it as something that you are always doing, whether you want to or not, because every interaction you have with someone is part of a relationship you're building. And so you can choose to be intentional about it, or you can just let it happen to you. So networking doesn't have to look specifically like self-promotion at a conference cocktail bar, which is often what people think of it as. Ultimately, we're building bridges, we're connecting with people, and you have no idea what one conversation now, how that will change your life going forward. So networking, or what we can say connecting, can look like following up with a mentor. It can be collaborating on a project, supporting colleagues, meeting people whose work you like and resonate with, staying connected to residency classmates or medical school classmates, reaching out to someone whose career path is interesting to you, finding co-conspirators, because, you know, we work better as a team and with other people.
And one thing that makes networking important that we don't talk about enough as women is that women are often socialized to believe that, you know, our work should speak for itself, our resume, our CV should speak for itself, but that's not necessarily the case. Visibility is really important, and advocacy is very important, both within yourself and relationally. One of my favorite mentors, Mira Sheffrin from Stanford, told me that, you know, good jobs are not found, they are created. And people have to know you to create a job for you. And so, you know, it's in addition to a networking and relationship building being about understanding yourself and your values, it's also about understanding other people and organizations and what do they want? What do they need? What are the problems they're solving that you can uniquely help solve? Because that's where you really find synergy in creating the best job for you. That's also going to be a good fit for the other side. And so in order to do that, you got to talk to people to really understand their values, their organizational needs, so, and kind of where your values and your skills really align. And a lot of those opportunities and conversations come up, as we talked about, organically in the people that you know, mentors, friends, colleagues. You know, you just may never know where you're going to have a helpful conversation that elucidates a path forward. But also don't be afraid to approach people that you don't know and you don't have warm relationships with. I remember when I was looking to work at a startup when I was in med school, I didn't know anybody in the startup world. So I just sent out 20 to 30 cold emails and prayed that somebody would respond. And the way that I did it was just to say, you know, make an ask that was not super burdensome. You know, could I have 20, 30 minutes of your time to understand what you do and what your company does? These are my interests. And I'd love to hear if you have any wisdom or just kind of what you do. People love talking about themselves. People love feeling like they have wisdom to give. And so, yeah. And you'd be surprised at how kind and generous people can be out there in sharing their time and their wisdom and their experiences. And you never know what kind of treasure you'll come across in those conversations.
Reminds me of one of my favorite expressions.
I was waiting for this.
What I always tell everyone, including the fellows, is close mouths, don't get fed. It's essentially, if you don't advocate for yourself by speaking up, you're not going to get what you want.
I love it. Close mouths, don't get fed. I use it all the time. Now it's become a life motto.
But yes, if you need pithy little comments, you can come to me.
Yeah. Kaylin's full of them. But yeah, I, you know, maybe it might be helpful to share some examples in our lives where we've utilized relationship building or networking. I remember when I was graduating fellowship and looking around for jobs, there was a organization in the community that I had admired, that I had heard a lot about, and they had no job postings for geriatricians. But I reached out to, you know, a distant acquaintance to see if they could put me in touch with somebody to learn more about the organization. And I ended up talking to their associate medical director to better understand what the needs of the organization were and would they be interested in hiring a geriatrician. And at that time, they said, hey, you're great, but we're just not in a place where we're looking for geriatricians right now. But, you know, let's keep in touch. Let's chat down the line. And so a few years later, after I've had some experience being a geriatrician and building programs, and I saw that this organization was starting to build a new senior care program, exactly like the one that I had worked in. I called up their associate medical director, who was now their chief medical officer, to say, hi, you know, do you need a geriatrician now? And they said, yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you reached out. And yeah, and that's how I got my current job.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I applied for fellowship. I met my current boss and I didn't end up going to that program for fellowship. But a few years later, when I was applying for jobs, I reached out to him and he had remembered me from fellowship and there wasn't a job. But as Alice said, the best jobs are created. And now here I am. So you just never know. Every time you connect with someone, that is a connection and you never know where it's going to go. And so take it seriously. You know, we are in the business of relationships and you are networking, whether you are a willing participant or not. Just know that. Okay, so let's talk about another topic that everyone loves, negotiation and the gender gap. And so negotiation. So historically, we've been told that men negotiate more than women. Recently, studies have shown that women negotiate just as much as men, but the outcomes are different. Women tend to enter negotiation with lower expectations. So, for example, with a lower starting salary ask, they face higher rejection rates. And there's a social cost for women who negotiate often because there's a penalty for assertiveness or certain qualities that people attribute more to men and are not as comfortable with women exhibiting. And so, unfortunately, we operate within a biased system and a structure where certain things are rewarded and women are not always rewarded for negotiating or even for not negotiating. Men are often shown to just be offered more promotions as well.
Oh, the realities of life. And we still got to set ourselves up for success. And one thing to remember, negotiating is not a battle. Like, you're not going in fight, putting in an armor. Like, no, that's not negotiation. At the end of the day, this is like the group or organization that you want to work for and with. So the way I kind of think about it is like, how can you set yourself up to be the most successful and the most helpful to them? And in order to do that, you have certain needs and certain requests. And you can also think about like, okay, how can you serve them? It will be in their best interest also for you to be as productive as you can be. So this is about like building a relationship and alignment that allows for both of you to be successful. And a part of it is also like, you know, you might not get everything your heart desired. That's okay. And kind of like thinking about like what are important to you. And it requires a lot of pre-work to understand what your values are. What are the things that you really want to optimize for? And what are the things that, you know, you're just okay with just taking it as is? So as much as you can like negotiate up front, it's like when you have the most amount of leverage rather than like, you know, during the last moment before you sign bringing something up. And then like also, as Alice had mentioned, like understanding your market value and unique fit. So like really doing your homework of like, what is this organization? What is this group? Having like talked to other people there. So you go in prepared as well. And especially in medicine, oftentimes in the corporate world, a lot of negotiation is around compensation, salaries. There are jobs in medicine that is a bit more fixed, that you can negotiate on salary because it's predetermined and everyone's at the same level. And that's kind of like the job I started at. You can negotiate on other things. So you can negotiate on the amount of FTEs you have, schedule structure, sometimes like remote work, call burden, mentorship, leadership opportunities, protected time for like academic projects, like promotion pathways, staffing resources. So there are so, so many others. Some places like relocation fees, like bonus upfronts. Like there are many, many different ways that you can negotiate and things to negotiate on that is not just salary. And the most important thing out of all the things we've said, believe in yourself, because no one else will if you don't. Know your worth, know your value, because like no one else will. believe in yourself. You can do it.
Yes.
You are not being difficult or advocating for what you need to be successful. So if it's, it feels too selfish to think about like, oh, this is like what I need, what I want. Think about like, okay, how can I be more successful in this job? What do I need to be more successful to others, to myself? So, but yeah, believe in yourself.
Yes, absolutely. I think even though there are biases in the workplace that impact the dynamics of women when it comes to negotiating, it is very important to negotiate. In fact, hiring managers expect you to negotiate. And as Charmaine and Kaylin talked about, there are different things that you can negotiate. So it's not just about salary. And there are different ways that we can negotiate such that it doesn't come off as overly combative or aggressive. So, you know, be collaborative, but firm about what's important to you. Really know yourself and know your values and also what you bring to the table. So it becomes amply clear what makes you uniquely qualified for the job. And it's helpful when you negotiate to not just talk about what you want, but speaking to values and principles and the market. You know, instead of just saying, I would like to have $20,000 more because I just want to have $20,000 more. But to say that, hey, you know, actually, I think given my level of experience and my research, this is kind of the market range. And that feels like what is fair. What do you think about that? And then also, very importantly, it's important to have a BATNA, which stands for Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement, which is basically a backup. It's good to have a backup to every negotiation. And in very simple terms, it's just what would happen if you walk away from that deal. And your BATNA may just be staying in your current job, and that's totally okay as well. But having a BATNA will really shape how much leverage you have. So for example, if you have multiple offers as you're negotiating a job, then you have multiple BATNAs that you can think about as you are negotiating this job. And each one will have their own pluses and minuses. And so, for example, if you have another offer as a BATNA, it gives you a lot of leverage to talk to the folks that you're currently negotiating with, even if the current opportunity that you're negotiating is the one that you really want. So, you know, you can politely say something like, hey, thank you so much for extending this opportunity. I so appreciate the amount of time the team has put together to offer me this package, and I'm genuinely excited about the possibility of joining the team. I do want to share that I have another opportunity that's offering, you know, X compensation or flexibility or built-in FTE for teaching or creative work or vacation time. Is there any flexibility in bringing the current offer closer to be more competitive? And you can politely, collaboratively say that. And then as people come back with counteroffers, decide for yourself what's most important to you. But you'll never know if you don't ask.
Close mouths don't get fed.
Close mouths don't get fed.
Yeah, very well said, Alice. And, you know, I think like when I was looking for jobs, as, you know, going back to like the values I had, the things I negotiated on, or as I was like getting multiple job offers, I was weighing against is like the amount of teaching time that was like offered to me. Protected time for medical education was a big one. And I think like one that is oftentimes it's not that hard for organization to do. I wanted to start later. So I wanted like a couple of months out of residency to just like, you know, have a life, travel, and start 2 months later. And that was a great plan. I had a beautiful vacation plan, and then the COVID happened. But that's a story for a different time. It threw back into a different world. Yeah. but and I was like lucky enough that the job that I ended up signing with had actually a lot of those things already built in, like the amount of teaching time and stuff. So that was like quite easy for me. So I didn't have to like go hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. One small example I'll share too is my first job out of training was a clinical job in the community. And it was pretty tough, to be honest, to negotiate flexible time that's non-clinical in the community. Mm. But I was also thinking about a possible job at an academic center. So I told them, hey, you know, it's really important to me to have some protected time to do some quality improvement, systems building work. And another job I'm considering would have a lot of built-in time for that. So I understand this is kind of a big ask, but could you carve out a little bit of time to support me in that? Because at that time, I really wanted to build a portfolio beyond just sharpening my clinical skills to take into the future. And they said, yes, they gave me a 0.2 to start. And that was really important.
Yeah. And I think just viewing negotiation not as like a me against you kind of thing, but just being it, you know, if you're negotiating, that means you're trying to make it work. So really coming in it from the perspective of like, I'm so excited about this job. I really want to make it work. These are the couple of sticking points. And I really would love to be able to sort this out so that we could make this work. So I'm really excited about. So it feels a lot more like, hey, I'm excited about this. I want this. It's not like a tit for tat. I'm trying to squeeze every, you know, dime out of you. But it's, I really want to make these work. And these are the things that I really feel like I need to make it work. And what can we do to get to the goal of me taking this job? So mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. And to say that providers, doctors, we're very expensive hires. When people hire us, they want us to stay. And so it's very important for your hiring manager to also consider what's going to be sustainable for you. And it's even sweeter if the thing you're negotiating will help the company. You know, hey, having this will make me more productive, help me build your organization better, make me more sustainable so I can last for years and years and move up in the company. Those are all attractive things for your hiring manager as well.
Yeah, for sure. As a team effort. So in closing out, going back to how it all started and thinking about like, you know, burnouts, and part of preventing burnout involves like building a career that aligns with your values, priorities, your humanity. So if at the end of all of this, when do this exercise for yourself, wherever you are in your career, or, you know, if you're like in medical school or training, pay attention to these things as you're getting more experience about like what kind of work gives you energy, what boundaries are non-negotiable for you, what does success look like in this season of your life, what sacrifices are you willing or unwilling to make, because every job, every work, every career comes with a sacrifice, and what environments help you thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no universally correct career path in medicine. The only correct one is the one that fits the life that you want and the life that you want to build.
Yeah. So know your values. Take time to reflect and realign if you need to. Embrace those values. Don't judge yourself for the values you have and don't have. Know that you are constantly networking. Every interaction you have is building a relationship. And every decision that you make, just know that people are paying attention and you're building your reputation. And it's a small world. Reputation is everything. And finally, you got to put yourself out there because, say it with me, closed mouths don't get bit. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone.
See you next time.
That's a wrap, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to be part of our community, join us for our live virtual morning report, where you can present the case or discuss with us. Visit our website for details. We would love to have you.